one more if it was a good fit. I certainly don't want to bring in two or three new farmers. But I also think, too, as we are looking ahead, and we talked about this in some in the last board meeting that I attended, the idea that we want to start incorporating some agroforestry systems, too, and so and include that as a draw for the incubator farm program. So I think, like, we're always redesigning. I think we're now looking at the incubator farm program and, like, how can we redesign it to include what I think is some pretty vitally important farming methods for the future, while still continuing to promote, like, this kind of stuff Jeremy's doing and we're doing on the CSA farm. And I think last year I even said this when we had got some applications in, like, I want to be really, really selective with who we bring into the program and make sure they're a right, good fit. Mm-hmm. I'd almost like to go into the application process assuming we're taking no one and have them prove us wrong. That's kind of my attitude. Mm-hmm. Because I want them to be
committed
and really a good fit for us, and I want us to be a good fit for them. You know, I want to set all of us up for success.
Because we've kind of been there, done that. People who weren't. And
It's a drag. I mean, it takes time and attention and labor and cost.
And waste the land.
Yeah. If there are some that are interested in doing it more agroforestry, would that then also entail placing them on other parts of the farm?
Well, I think, an agroforestry system is a long-term perennial system, right? And so we really have to rethink through how that would work in an incubator setting.
That's what I mean.
Like, we're not going to bring in an incubator farmer that we don't know and say, here's land for you to start planting trees in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, A, we need to understand the land and where that's best suited, but I think there's a lot of conversation before we really settle on what it's going to look like. But my vision is that we would have sort of an agroforestry system set up that we had someone through the Horn Farm managing, and then the incubator farmers would come in and work with that person to understand those systems and help foster them, and then eventually the incubators would then graduate, so to speak, and leave and start their own systems elsewhere, or potentially on this property.
So rather than like it's been like as far as them with planting the kind of food that incubator farmers have been growing, so it's more like they would rather than put up their own system here. I hear you saying that they would just work with somebody and learn side by side.
That's my take on it because of the fact it's such a permanent system. But again,
I think we need to think about incubator farmers / interns, because that's really an internship program. And
mm-hmm.
And I think we give as much importance to that internship training as to independent incubator farmers.
Yeah.
That may be a change in our thinking a little bit about how
the
incubator farm system works.
And that reflects the ideas that we've been tossing around about allowing the internship to be selecting different components of annual, perennial, and woodland experiences in order to craft that particular internship experience. We had looked at 2019 as the very beginning of what we would be inviting people to participate in an internship that involved agroforestry,
mm-hmm.
so it wouldn't be this year.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of planning and thought and
design.
Because in a sense, the beekeeping program is kind of like that too. I mean, you're training people how to do this, and then they go out and do their own thing. So.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past few years, I know the original thinking about incubator farming is that it would be a resource, like a monetary resource for the Horn Farm. It was part of the mission of what we wanted to do, and I'm just wondering in retrospect, you know, we learned a lot from the incubator farm programs, but did it bring in money?
I don't think that was its intention.
Yeah, I don't know that we ever intended to make.
Its intention was to train young farmers to go out and be able to farm. I don't think money making was ever.
Yeah.
We wanted to break even. I mean, we didn't want it to be in the hole, but I don't think it was meant to be.
I mean, in the last 2 years is when we sort of shifted that a little bit and we added in like program fees to a more.
Yeah.
So it's bringing in some income, but it's not.
But
I would say it's like a main
income
generator.
It's not a cash cow.
It's not a cash cow.
And nor was it ever envisioned to be one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
You were there in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, the idea it was a thrilling idea that we didn't want young farmers to feel that they were left out of the picture and that they could, you know, be given this opportunity through us.
Because we are a nonprofit.
It was a dream.
Yeah, we're a nonprofit agricultural education
entity. That's right. That's right. And nobody else at the time, except for Seed Farm and what was going on up in
Innerdale.
Yeah, was doing this. So we were kind of breaking new ground, literally here.
And I think what it sounds like is it's going to continue to evolve, and we're kind of staying ahead of the curve as far as considering
the
agroforestry.
Yep.
Look, so to me, you know, the incubator farm program, what I look at, it's like annual crops and business training to sell those crops.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, like you had just said, it's a kind of a ways out, kind of reworking that and getting the idea of more of a permanent permaculture kind of look to it. So you said about having them try to convince you that they are bought in, I guess would be the word, or committed to that. So besides the idea of helping the Horn Farm and helping the land that we have here, you know, how do you convince somebody that, you know, they're going to put in time to create this agroforest landscape and then leave?
So one of the ideas bouncing around that's pretty compelling is that the Lancaster County Conservancy has 6,000 acres of land that needs to be stewarded, some of which is already being put into agroforestry systems. So we're actually incubating places for them to go that has a substantial head start on,
right.
So they wouldn't be starting from scratch.
Right.
But they jump into a situation where they had the skill set to do that.
Right, and that's what's great about this place is that you can experiment, you can try, you can fail, which I'm sure there will be failures with some things. Yeah, with a lot of things, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can take that experience elsewhere.
Well, two things. I think the partnership with Lancaster Conservancy is fantastic because they are a solid group here in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, there will always be a place, though, here, I think, for our original concept of incubator farmers. That is, somebody who wants to come and have a small farm and make a living as a small-time farmer.
Like Betsy.
Yeah.
She could easily be growing something else, strawberries or...
Right.
Whatever.
To me, that's
right.
The definition of the CSA. That's the community member supporting the agriculture that most people are used to seeing and providing them with.
There's definitely a need for that.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is. It's going to be even greater as time goes on.
Is there any York County Conservancy?
There is the Lancaster, there is the York County Farm and Natural Lands
Trust.
But
that's
very different from the Conservancy. They have a staff of two. And they have basically not a real good pot of money. And they don't have behind them a long history of people who have supported and endowed the organization like the Conservancy does. Nor do they own land.
Okay. Yeah.
The connection I found there is when I met him at their annual meeting here with Sean Kenny saying in the past year and a half, he bought a farm over off of, it's on Reynolds Mill Road. That he would like to draw small farmers to. He said, I don't even know that I want them to pay for the land, but that he wants to draw small farmers to that would be like our small incubator farms, and he wants to provide, open up.
And I
and
think
so
there
to
are
have
other,
somebody like that, I
there
think
are
that
other,
would feed that side.
Who was this?
There are other properties.
Sean
the
Kenny
Trust.
He's one of the two people in the York County Farm and Natural Lands Trust.
Okay.
There was a landowner at the Dave Jackie workshop last Saturday. And he was there because he has 65 acres that he wants a young farmer to farm. And the Friday before that, I had spent at an agricultural land leasing workshop looking at different ways to do long-term leases and the legalities of it. and there was a farmer panel there, and they were talking in particular about the difficulties of working with an individual versus an organization, because the personalities have to mesh, expectations have to be met on both sides. There's a lot of... the conclusion was it's much more difficult to work with an individual, because one person's idea of having a young organic farmer on my property is so great. Yeah, well, until it doesn't look like what you wanted it to look like.
Yeah.
Or smell like what you wanted it to smell like. And so there's a lot of conversation locally and nationally talking about how to get farmers where the people who eat are when land prices are prohibitive for that. So it was interesting to hear that leasing is more economically viable for these farmers, even while they have alternate plans to building equity, because that's one of the difficulties of being a leasing farmer is you don't end up owning your property. But there are other ways of building equity in a business, which I'm interested in exploring, because they're pretty creative ways that land trust, there's a big land trust and a nonprofit in New England called Land for Good that's put together some really creative ways of getting farmers on farms, farming for the local community. So I'm looking forward to sharing that sort of those ideas with the board going forward.
Well, that was one of the issues that we always had in front of us as the Incubator Farm Committee, was to try to figure out what to do with farmers
when they
left.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you steer them? How do you help them get settled?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, of course, Jeremy never left. So
not yet.
He's still here.
He's looking for a very particular place.
Yeah. I don't think he's looking that hard.
No,
I don't think so either.
So the internship, I already talked about Betsy and Mike a little bit. About to sort of revamp that for next year and get that posted. And I've had a couple contacts already showing up interested and asking about the program. So do you want to talk about the Farm in General, Andrew, CSA, whatnot?
Yeah, sure. Well, just some new things that we've been harvesting. We started to dig sweet potatoes, and they look awesome.
There's some purple ones.
Some purple sweet potatoes. They're deep purple. They look like beets. And I actually roasted one of mine Tuesday, the day I got my CSA, and they're really good. So we had some issues with some harlequin beetles on our kale crop, but we actually did impromptu planting of some more brassicas, some collards, some more kale, some cabbages, and they took off pretty nicely. It was really hot that week, about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, so with a little bit of water and some daily scouting of those beetles, we were able to keep those at bay, and then it got cold, some really cold nights, and I think that deters them, so... that stuff looks really good. Got some beets in the ground, some turnips in the ground. We lost some lettuce during that hot couple days, but we did a second planting. I think we plan to put some more lettuce out. Kind of going back to continuing our conversation about Jeremy and incubator farmers, we've been able to kind of rely on him. For some of the staple crops like carrots, potatoes, onions, and that's been super helpful.
Do we pay Jeremy when he provides?
Yeah, we had budgeted in a certain percentage of the CSA income to purchase him from Jeremy.
Yeah.
He still has his hoop house with tomatoes. And, you know, we had to get some tomatoes from him Tuesday for the CSA. And he actually ran out of time picking some. So I think John and Mike, after I left for the day, went and picked. And I'm pretty sure Jeremy said, you know, if you guys are picking them, then I'm not going to charge you for them. So I think having Jeremy here is a really good resource. And whether he's still considered, I mean, I know he's under the umbrella of incubator farmer, but maybe he, depending on what his vision is for the future, short term or long term, maybe that changes. And
sort of fits into a little bit the mentor
category, CSA,
like
yeah. Well, and also we had attended the PASA conference, the soil health conference at Spiral Path Farms, and they run a pretty streamlined, pretty large scale CSA, close to, I think, close to 3,000 shares, 2,500 shares.
Wow.
And we came back with some ideas as far as, you know, scaling it down for the Horn Farm here. Not necessarily what and how they're running their CSA, but more, for me, this is what I took away, more kind of just design and planning and implementing those plans and sticking to planning. And with that kind of exposure, with that exposure, and then also talking about the strategic plan and the long-term plan here with implementing more agroforestry and combining annual plants with perennial plants and trying to get a combination of both. We've been talking about planning next year and maybe scaling down the CSA as far as memberships, and offering maybe less diverse vegetables for the CSA, but also spending time doing and implementing the ideas of agroforestry and, you know, permaculture concepts. So that's kind of where we're at in thinking about next year.
Also looking at devoting some space to quote-unquote cash crops.
Mm-hmm.
So a little less diversity for management, but some bigger sections of certain things that we know we can sell really well.
Such as?
Carrots is one I keep thinking of because I'm thinking of what kind of crops are sellable, fairly low maintenance to grow, but also hold really long.
Yeah.
Like tomatoes is a nice crop, but you
yes.
have to sell them within three
yeah.
days or they're,
yeah.
you know,
they're done.
Right.
So it's things that we can store and sell over a period
mm-hmm.
of time.
And things that people might buy to keep switching them to buying more locally
yeah.
that aren't maybe, like you said, that aren't as prevalent.
Yeah.
There's tons of local tomatoes.
Yeah, so I got a little, we have some thoughts and research to figure out on that stuff.
Is it still the same family that runs Spiral Path?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, Mike and Tara Brownback, but
yeah,
Mike,
Brownback.
They just recently sold the farm to their son.
Well, they did.
So Will Brownback, the son, is, I guess, is he actual farm manager now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's same family, but it's dropped a generation. So.
Well, I remember when we went out there to visit them. You were, did you go along
No,
the
this
time?
Was my first time there.
Oh, boy. I was so impressed with that place.
Yeah.
And the best dinner I have ever had, she made. She went out and picked everything fresh, brought it back, and created this wonderful pasta dinner with greens. And oh, my gosh.
We had a really good lunch that wasn't 100% provided by Spiral Path, but it was some local people, but it was a good lunch, too.
Yeah, it's just a new farm.
Yeah, it is.
And their marketing area is
pretty,
huge.
Pretty wide,
yeah.
And their ability to keep their overhead down by making their own potting soil, making their own compost. They have computerized watering systems and fertigation systems. So,
do they still bring people in to help them harvest? They brought
migrant labor
in.
Yep.
Yeah, to help pick.
So they have housing, I guess. And we didn't get a tour of the housing where some of the full time employees live, but. I envision something like that here, whether that's realistic or not, down the road, something like a house for young interns
mm-hmm.
or...
You just want to move in.
Woofers.
Yeah, that idea surfaced before. These are good ideas as we go through strategic planning process and we're thinking long term.
All right, well, we'll move on. Thanks, Andrew. Do you want to talk anything about the large scale farming or is there anything to say about that?
The corn harvest started yesterday.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's just spooky to watch this big old combine that's like 25 feet wide go down the road and up the hill, and these tractor trailers follow them up there, and then they start throwing the corn in and stuff's flying. It's like,
I passed him yesterday when I picked up the Horn Farm cards. I went up the road,
oh, yeah,
and there he was.
Yeah.
All for $100 an acre profit. It just blows my mind.
It's kind of mind-blowing.
Oh, my gosh.
That's not very much profit.
No,
is that an acre?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, the average locally is like 100 to 300. 300 is on the high end.
That's
why like
they
per acre.
So much
yeah.
land.
Yeah.
And it's very intensive in terms of resources, like water and
big time.
But how do you know how many acres the Flemish Boss leaves now? It's
thousands.
Oh, it's close to two.
Yeah.
Close to 2,000.
It was.
Well, it had to be, right? At $100
an
acre.
Yeah.
Back when we first got the Horn Farm, they were leasing 1,400 acres. And I know it's got to be, I bet it's double that now.
Yeah.
I just saw that on some of those things I gave you. Number.
Oh yeah, huh.
And the and when we were trying to save the Horn Farm, and the Board of Supervisors wanted to rezone this industrial, Andy Flinchball, who was 18 at the time, got up and gave this. I found a copy of it.
Oh,
this
wow.
eloquent statement at the supervisors meeting, and he ended it with a poem about saving the land. I mean, it was just
and
really
he hasn't spoken since.
But this was Andy, and I thought,
wow.
Who is this young kid? Mike was 22, and Andy was 18.
Yeah.
Did you
Mike
say
was a,
you have a copy of that?
Yeah, I do.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, yeah. I should
that's
get that.
Funny.
I didn't know if we kept that or not, but we did. That's
wow.
what he
that's
read.
Good. Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Who
that's how
that?
Important it was to stay farming and why their family was going to continue to farm, and farming was not dead in the township. I mean, he was just eloquent.
I really think that they're an enormous asset because they've got orcharding experience and annual pumpkins and tomatoes and peppers and everything.
Livestock,
as well as this monoculture thing.
Right.
But I just think if we can squiggle that in the other direction. We were talking about the mission statement the other day about showcasing the past,
present,
and future of farming. And Joan said, we don't talk about the past. I said, well, that's the past over there. These big monoculture fields are the past.
Fair point.
It's getting to be the past.
Yeah.
So
that's what I have on that. That's what I have on that.
You want to talk about the woodland? I can if you don't want to.
No, I can. I'm just organizing my thoughts. So we're talking a lot about the Woodland Restoration Project and how we started this in April with a land restoration workshop that we got one of our neighbors to attend, and Tom Smith of the
Keep York Beautiful
and
Penn State Extension.
Thank you. And he's done something similar on his own properties in a suburban area.
Amazing what he's done.
Yeah. So that was an exciting start to this, and we brought in Wilson Alvarez to talk about humans reconnecting with the forest in ways that are beneficial to the land and the forest and to human beings. And so we've been playing with that ever since April, and when we get people who are interested, groups who are interested in volunteering here at the Horn Farm, we've been steering them into the woods because we're creating access paths. We've got a path that goes all the way up from the edge of the incubator farm field all the way up to the top field now. There's bridges across the stream. There are steps to get down into a deeper place. And so many people have entered those woods and come out transformed in just a few hours. So we really feel like this is important work that we're doing, because I believe, and I think that we believe that the reason that we've treated the land this way is that we feel like it's outside of us and separate from us. So reestablishing this these webs of relationships is healthy on the outside and healthy on the inside for people. So we're really looking hard at how to continue and amplify this work as soon as 2018, which means we have to find some money to pay for staff, an additional staff person, as well as some materials and tools. So I'm just going to wrap this into some other stuff.
Sure.
So the Finance Committee met last night and looked at the first iteration of the 2018 draft, in which we included two additional staff people. One would be an office manager sort of person, part-time, to take. I found that now that these systems are in place in terms of the accounting and the database and the procedures are in place, I'm spending all my time doing day-to-day administrative tasks, and I'm not able to get enough time to do the grant applications and to do the fundraising, donor cultivation, and to be building relationships out in the community. And so the feeling of the committee was that they were in agreement that in order to free up my time to take the organization to the next level, I need somebody here that I can depend on to be doing these sorts of things. So, and then my next task is to come up with a fund development plan, grants that would support this work, and a time frame for bringing Wilson on as a staff person to be directing the stewardship program, the Woodland Stewardship. So next on my plate is to look at what's actually a really heartening landscape for grant availability. Just yesterday, DCNR announced that they have funds available for multifunctional riparian buffers, which is the same pilot program that the Lancaster Conservancy was invited to apply for and is scheduled to happen in Kanoi Township. So they have a design, they've done the application, they're moving forward. I don't think the funds have exactly been awarded yet, but they were invited to apply rather than, it wasn't a competitive grant at that point, is my understanding. So the same thing is, DCNR seems to have found a different source of funds for the same sort of work. So I'm in the process of putting together that, which is due in December. There's a small grant that I'm applying for that's due at the end of this month through New Belgium Brewing Company, which is a certified B Corp. They give back to the communities in which they sell their products. It's employee-owned. It's a really cool business model that they have going on, and they have four priority areas: sustainable farming, beginning farmers, water resources, and bicycle advocacy. And so we meet three of those.
And it's beer.
That's right. Because I think I think their flagship beer is Fat Tire.
Oh.
So I think that's where that came from.
Yeah.
Well, they're out of Colorado Springs, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So Colorado Springs used to be one of, it was like the top five cities in the country for bike, like,
yeah,
bike friendly. It was the top five bike friendly cities in the country. So that's probably where that came from.
So, and the Rural Business Development Grant, which is what we got in 2015 for the incubator farm, for the greenhouse irrigation system, the roller crimper,